Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today I get to welcome Stephen Smith to the podcast. Stephen is senior pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Little Rock, Arkansas, as well as a senior preaching fellow here with us at the Spurgeon Center for Biblical Preaching at Midwestern Seminary. Dr. Smith, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. Great to be here.
Yes, I'd like to have you on campus. And I did not realize until we were talking earlier today that it's been 3.5 years since you were here last.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah, the chapel is here, but that's about it. I haven't been able to see the Spurgeon Library, the recent changes. Really incredible all that God has done.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it had been 3.5 years. And in that you are a senior preaching fellow of the Spurgeon Library, you need to see the Spurgeon Library.
Exactly.
In current form, at least.
Exactly. Yeah, it's incredible. I just the last few minutes been able to walk through it. Haven't taken anything to the best of your knowledge.
You will be frisked on your way out. Okay. That's a standard operating procedure for those who visit the Spurgeon Library.
Yeah, but unbelievable. Incredible. Still soaking it all in.
You preach a phenomenal sermon today in chapel on the Good Samaritan, Luke chapter 10. And so thank you for your ministry of the word to us. And you have a lot going on in your life here in the past year. You served for about a decade at Southwestern Seminary as dean of the college and as vice president there. And 8 months ago, you became pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Well, I really feel blessed in the sense that going to the seminary was a joy to teach, but principally a joy to learn. And so I feel like I got to go back to school. The time I was there, my understanding of preaching, theology of preaching, philosophy of preaching changed, shifted. And so now I feel like I'm in a position to preach what I've been teaching and to see if these theories actually work. And so I've been thrilled to be there. The people of Emmanuel have been wonderful, so very honored to be there.
Now, and I know the church pretty well, but those listening probably do not. So say a word about the church, the history of the church, and kind of what's before you guys here currently about ministry opportunities.
Absolutely. Historic church, 125 years old. God's really blessed the church through the years. They had a legacy pastor for 38 years from the 1950s, 60s, and into the 70s. Named W.O. Vaught, incredibly profound leader, and his footprint is still on the church. Primarily, he was influential because in the middle of his ministry, he shifted away from topical preaching to expository preaching, which has had a profound impact on the church. Currently, we're looking at how we can impact the city. Little Rock has had a tough year in terms of crime rate, murder, and also there's an intellectual center of the city that hasn't yet been reached. And so we're doing two things right now. We're creating a space where we're going to do mercy ministries. That's going to be a large footprint of our own campus, reaching to some very difficult areas in the city. We're thrilled about that. And then also we're starting a form of conversations in the city that'll be somewhat of a lecture series. We're going to bring in people who are great thinkers and great minds who are Christians, but they're in the arenas of influence and try to influence the influencers.
Good. And you and your wife, Ashley, have 3 children.
We do. Yeah.
And their ages?
12, 9, and 5. So Jewel, our oldest, Sydney, our middle one, and Shep, who's just turned 5.
And which one is the accomplished dabber?
That's Sydney.
Okay.
That's our 9-year-old.
Okay, we've seen pictures floating around. So
absolutely.
There you have it, folks.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's great to have you in the studio today on Preaching and Preachers, recording this podcast with you. And one of the new initiatives we're doing here on the podcast is as we have guests who have a particular expertise or particular experience with a particular genre of literature or book of the Bible, recording podcasts around that topic. So, for instance, next week I'm recording a podcast with Dr. Kostenberger on preaching the Gospel of John. And to you, we're recording today on preaching the book of James. Now, again, for those listening, Dr. Smith taught homiletics for many years at Southwestern, and as a man both in the classroom and in print, has given much thought and attention to preaching genres of literature. And the book of James is fresh on your mind because you're preaching through the book of James. So I guess perhaps tease out for us just a moment what I said a moment ago more broadly about your interest in different genres and types of literature, and kind of what has brought you thinking more intentionally along those lines?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our great Southern Baptist heritage is we have a great homiletic heritage of having great sermon outlines. And so there was a time in Southern Baptist life where the sermon outline was an art form that transcended all things. And that's our heritage. And it's a good heritage. You know, there's people that I love and have listened to and have been important to my spiritual formation who have treated the text that way. What I found when I began pastoring is that at some point there was a thinness to that, meaning I just felt like it wasn't a genuine expression of what the text was doing. And so that along with some influences and books that I'd read at the seminary while teaching, helped me to understand that what I could do is look at a text and read it enough so that its own structure became buoyant. It came to the surface. And then once I saw that structure in the text, that was the sermon. So the sermon was a representation of the text. So Dr. David Allen used to always say, which I love, we're not preaching sermons, we're preaching text. And so that's just profoundly liberating.
And the book of James. So you're preaching it now. Tell us about that series, how long you've been in it, how many sermons it'll likely be. Give us kind of the big picture.
Yeah, it's a fall series. It'll run about 14 sermons. And one thing that's unique to James, and I learned this from Mark Taylor, who's at Southwestern, who did his dissertation on James, is that historically people have struggled to find any structure in the book, treating it like the Proverbs of the New Testament. There is a theme, I think, and there is a structure. And so the theme, if I were pressed to take one, was test of the faith. So you have obviously works being a test of faith, James 2, but then you also have the rich and the poor, you have the tongue. James presents these things as works that give evidence of a genuine faith. Dr. Taylor, and I agree with this, believes that there is a structure to the book, but it's different. All the major themes, and there are maybe five major themes in the book, they're all found in chapter 1. As you read through the book, what you find is these themes that he brings up about faith and about the tongue and about the word and about worldliness and about the rich and the poor, the disparity between there, they're all teased out through the rest of the book. So we're doing something a little bit different. I think this is the only book you can do this in, but I'm preaching expository text-driven sermons to the book of James, but I'm not preaching it sequentially, meaning I took all the text on faith and preached those, all the text on the word and preached those. And I think, you know, the reason why that's scary to do in any other book is because Ephesians, for example, has a clear theological and then practical flow. Chapter 4, verse 1, therefore, based on what I just taught theologically, Paul says, walk now. But James doesn't do that. All the themes are like a fabric. They're all woven together. So to pull that fabric apart and show its constituent parts, I don't think violates the meaning of the text. You can do that with James.
Let me zoom out for a moment here. Zoom out not so much the book of James, but more pastorally to your context. You've been at the church 8 months. You made the decision evidently sometime during the summer, perhaps sooner to preach James. Why James? Why James now? Why James this moment in the life of your church?
I don't have any other answer other than I just sense that's what God was telling me to do. I talked to the committee and back in December, and I said, you know, if I come, I think what I'll do is preach parables in the spring. I was familiar with parables. I'd preach maybe five of the Lucan parables, but not all of them. So I love them, but I'm interested in doing the rest of them. Do Psalms in the summer and then do James in the fall. And frankly, it was just neat. You know, the amount of parables in Luke fit neatly into a spring January through June schedule. Psalms are fluid. I just isolated some Psalms, and then James fit neatly into a fall schedule. So it wasn't any more than that kind of practical thing that led me to do it. And also, I'd taken some advice that when you go to a new church, preach somewhat familiar things because you're going to be top heavy in administration. I'd preached through James before, and not all the parables, but I had preached through James. So there's been a little bit of freedom there.
And so come back now to the your approach. 14 weeks, the book has five chapters. You just said that you're not doing it sequentially, though you typically would preach sequentially. Make the case for that. I mean, I heard what you said, but, you know, I teach, you teach typically preaching sequentially through the book of the Bible. Obviously, that's a detour from what I do, a detour from what you typically do. Make the case for that as forcefully as you can.
In my opinion, you couldn't do that with any other epistles because of the logic, the flow of the argument. Even though there is a theme of testing, I don't think any scholar argues that each of the constituent parts are dependent upon their context. Now, you do find some, but generally, James is somewhat abrupt and he moves. So I think you can lift a text out of its context. So this last Sunday, I did the classic text on the tongue, James 3, 1 through 12. And then I'm moving this next Sunday to 4, 13 and following that talks about boasting. So there's two texts about the tongue. If the meaning of that individual text is influenced by its surrounding context, I'll bring that out. But the logical progression of thought that's developed in a book is not so strong in James. It's not a quality of how he writes that it necessitates preaching sequentially. In other words, I think you can break the sequence and still communicate the meaning.
And in that sense, it's a little bit like the book of Proverbs.
Exactly.
Because my mind races there. Once, many, many years ago, I was preaching, and I preached in the book of Proverbs, and I kind of lumped together different proverbs on the topic of fear, on the topic of wisdom, on the topic of faith, on the topic of suffering, on the topic of the tongue, on the topic of finances. So I guess there are some similarities there, perhaps. So let me ask the question this way then. To those listening who are Bible teachers, Bible preachers, they hear what you're saying. You're in the book of James. Approaching the book of James, what should preachers be aware of? What should they be intentional about familiarizing themselves with before they seek to preach the book of James?
Well, as an encouragement, I would just look yourself in the mirror, write yourself, and say, okay, God, whatever you say, I'm going to say it. Because James is hard. It's deceptive because people think we love it. It's so practical, meaning it's affirming. But my word, there's a couple of big theological nuts to crack. You've got the faith of that works, and then you've got the prayer of faith in chapter 5, those issues. But it's just so confrontational. You know, I said to my church last Sunday, this is James kind of getting us in the corner and poking us in the chest and saying, come on, man. Over 50 commands in the book. And so it's tempting to represent the content without representing the feel, but that misrepresents the text. If you're going to represent the feel of the text, you're going to be using imperatives and saying, you have to do this. So I would just say practically, be prepared to confront yourself first and then your people with the directives in the text.
Now, the whole issue of faith and works in the book of James. So I'm going to rewind back about 15 years, 14 years. I was pastoring a church, and I got a phone call from a fellow seminarian, a guy I did not know. Our wives knew one another to some degree, but not very well. And he told me, he called me, he said, Jason, I'm in a little bit of a pickle. I have a church I'm interviewing with and to become pastor, and it was a small church. And he said, they want to hear me preach, but there's not really a place for me to preach. He said, could you give me your pulpit on Sunday night or Wednesday night so I can preach for the members of the search committee? And look, it, as a seminarian, you just ought to be sympathetic to other seminarians, right?
Right.
And so I said, look, I'll do it. So I gave him the pulpit on Wednesday night, and you know, five or six of these search committee members came, and he preached this trial sermon for the search committee, and he chose to preach on James 2, and he sought to harmonize faith and works. And not the easiest topic to harmonize, but he made it none the easier in how he had sought to do it. And it was complicated, it was nuanced, and I can see these folks on the search committee who were just, you know, normal Southern Baptist folks, and they're trying to process it. And man, I could tell by watching him midway through this sermon, he sensed that he was in a tough space. So with that, the topic of faith and works, those who had preached this book wanting to harmonize and make sense of what James is saying, of course, vis-a-vis what Paul would say, what do you say to them?
It's a great question, and I would say that first of all, remember that harmony is the secondary goal, not the primary goal. So what oftentimes we'll do as a preacher is we'll take a tough text like this where he's going to say, you know, let's just say it plain, if you don't have works, you're not saved. If you don't have works to evidence your faith, you're not saved. And so what we'll do is we'll begin a sermon by saying, hey, we know we're all saved. We know we're all Christians. In other words, we let people off the hook before we even created the hook. So this text is heavy. It's weighty. It seems on its surface confusing. Let it be all those things at first. Let that sit on people, the weight of it. And then go to Romans 3:28, which seems to say the opposite. You can't have, you know, which Paul is saying that, look, it's faith that's the issue. And then, of course, explain the different audiences. Paul is writing to legalists who believed you had to add works to faith to be saved. James seems to be writing to libertarians who thought as long as you had faith, you didn't need works. And I would say James is more applicable today. I mean, we do have legalism today, but I think we have a lot more license. People are saying, look, as long as you've prayed a prayer or as long as you have grace, you're fine. We need to say, look, there has to be works that accompany your faith if you're going to have any confidence that you're in Christ.
That's very well put. So in other words, don't rush to round the edges.
Yeah.
Don't rush to harmonize. Yes, let the tension... Yes. Let it bake for a little bit before you harmonize it and round it out.
Yeah.
Hey, Stephen, let's pause just for a moment for a word of update from Midwestern Seminary.
Midwestern Seminary's 81-hour Master of Divinity degree prepares you for ministry today and tomorrow. Midwestern Seminary's flagship degree program is our primary track for ministry preparation. Requiring only 81 credit hours, the MDiv program is an efficient option for students, equipping them to serve the church in pastoral ministry. Residential students will be trained in a unique community environment passionately focused on the local church. Online students can earn the full degree without leaving their current ministry context. Come be a part of one of the fastest growing seminaries in North America as we develop a new culture of discipleship devoted to the local church and committed to taking God's unchanging word into a rapidly changing world. Visit mbts.edu/mdiv today.
All right, I'm back with Dr. Stephen Smith talking about preaching the book of James. So you've already kind of brushed up against this, but anything else you would want to add for our listeners about the micro and macro themes of the book of James?
Well, other than that, he's heavily dependent upon wisdom literature. The word blessing comes up quite a bit. So go back and look at the nature of wisdom literature. I think, you know, and Doug Moove picks up this in his commentary, that he's not going back to Proverbs, but he's going back to wisdom literature through the Sermon on the Mount. So that would be the second thing. He's dependent on wisdom literature, but he's heavily dependent on the Sermon on the Mount. And he also seems to be dependent upon a lot of the metaphors of Christ. So I think those two things influence it. And probably the third thing that really does influence interpretation all the way throughout is that he's writing to the 12 tribes. This is 1:1. This is a family book. My brothers, my brothers, my brothers. So when I preached this Sunday, I was preaching 3:1-13. Brothers is mentioned in there three times. I think it's a gender neutral statement he's saying to the family. I stopped and I said, listen, family, tongue can control you. The tongue can contaminate you. But I would say, listen, family, listen, Emmanuel, because it was influenced by what he was doing there in the text by constantly calling them brothers.
That's good. Very helpful. What are the main theological or expositional insights one should be aware of when preaching James?
That's a good question. I think that a big question you have to come up with is length of text. You could easily do five sermons on, you know, 2:14-26, the end of the section, end of the chapter on faith without works. I'm going to do it in two. And you could easily do a, you know, multi-part series on taming the tongue. I just did all that in one. And the reason why I did that is because I felt like, you know, there's nuances there at every level, but the argument he's making is 1-13. And so as much as you would gain in looking at the micro view, you lose something by looking at the whole semantic structure. There's meaning in that whole semantic structure. So one of the things you've got to think about is length of text. I think it's an exegetical concern, one, but two, it's a pastoral concern. Maybe the church is really struggling with the issue of faith and works, and you want to take four Sundays, or maybe the tongue is a big issue and you want to take five Sundays. So I don't think that's prescribed to us. I would just say, just as an encouragement, if you do take smaller units of text, be sure that you show how they fit into the larger argument.
So in preaching the book then, what are some of the difficulties associated with preaching this book in particular?
Yeah. Well, we've mentioned some. The directness of the book, it's very terse. Another difficulty is that there are some theological nuts that you'll have to crack. And the other difficulty, and I'm feeling this right now, let me just back up and talk about my context. I preached to the parables, and I thought, well, that'd be a great thing to start. You know, Mark Dever says when you're starting a new church, always begin with the gospel because people can't argue with Jesus. So I began with the gospel of Luke and just preached the parables through Luke. But when I did that, what I found is that these aren't just nice, affirming stories. Man, the Gospels are so tough. And I didn't plan on how much they deal with money. And I mean, to the point where, I mean, our budget went up. I mean, our giving went up. And so everybody thought I was doing that on purpose. I really wasn't. I was just walking through the parables. But man, it was, you know, you are divesting in this kingdom to invest in the kingdom to come. It's so real. And then you get into James. Oh, my word, the sin of partiality. You got 1:26-27. It's just, you know, there's a lot of that in there that you have to be prepared for. So again, don't shy away from it. Just be prepared for it. And you have to intuitively think about how your people are handling this so that you know when to back off and when to press the pedal down further.
And our time is flying by here. And just with a couple minutes left, a couple of final questions for you, Stephen. What resources have been helpful for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot out there. I mentioned Mark Taylor that I've been dependent upon. He's fantastic, what he's written on James. There is the new Zondervan series is good. I think Blomberg and another author wrote the one on James. What I like about that is he does deal with semantic structure, which I think is so helpful. Theologically and exegetically, I just, you know, I still go back to Moo. It's fantastic. It's really good. He's written two, one in the Tyndale series, maybe earlier, and then one later in the Pillar. And there's some differences. He shifts, which is pretty interesting on some issues. But two others that came to mind in the Christ-Centered Exposition, you have David Platt's sermons, and that series lends itself just to sermons. And so as I'm reading these, they are sermons in print. The sermonic nature, the pastoral feel of it comes out. And then also there's a semantic structural analysis book just called the SSA. That's very, very helpful. It's a book written for linguists who are translating in the field the Bible. And if you want to help with the structure, very, very helpful.
Man, well done. And look, I'll put you on the spot here.
Yeah.
You're showing good abilities for recollection. Okay. All right, last question for us. Your final word of counsel to pastors considering preaching through the book of James.
Know your structure, pick your parameters, your length, and then just buck up and make the directives clear.
It is a great book to preach.
Oh, yeah.
I've preached through it before, and it's practical, it's direct.
Yeah.
If you struggle with application, you don't have to struggle too hard because the application is on the surface.
Yes, and the word pictures that he uses.
Yeah, it's a great
amazing.
Book to preach. And I have, like you, preached it early in ministry context before for many of the reasons we've talked about here the past 20 minutes. Stephen, thank you for the gift of your time today. Thank you for joining me on Preaching and Preachers. And may the Lord be with you and Ashley and your family, and to just bless you and your children and your new ministry position in every way.
Thank you, friend. Thanks for letting me come today. Very grateful.
You bet. Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.